The U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza continues for the 149th day, with the death toll exceeding 30,400, mostly women and children. Several Israeli forces are killed and their military equipment destroyed as Palestinian fighters carry out more retaliatory operations across Gaza. Also in the headlines, a top Hamas official says talks are taking place in the Egyptian capital Cairo with the hope of finalizing a ceasefire deal in Gaza. Thanks for joining us. The ongoing Israeli genocidal campaign in the Gaza Strip keeps taking a heavy toll on civilians, with scores killed in the regime's attacks. At least 10 people were killed in an Israeli airstrike targeting a house in the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza Strip. At least 11 civilians were also killed in an Israeli airstrike that targeted a tent for displaced people in Rafah. Dozens of civilians were killed in Israeli strikes in Khan Yunis and Deir al-Bala in southern and central Gaza. For the second time in less than 48 hours, Israeli troops opened fire on Palestinians waiting for aid in Gaza City, killing one and injuring dozens. The death toll from Israel's onslaught on Gaza since early October has surpassed 30,400, most of them women and children. More than 71,000 others have been injured, while thousands more remain unaccounted for. The Palestinian fighters are putting up stiff resistance to Israeli forces in Gaza as fighting on the ground rages on. The military wing of Hamas resistance movement said its fighters blew up a booby-trapped house that resulted in death or injury of at least 7 regime soldiers in Khan Yunis. Al-Qassam Brigade said the group was also able to seize an Israeli Skylark drone in Gaza City. Israel confirmed the deaths of 3 soldiers in the Gaza Strip. It also said 14 others were injured, 6 of them seriously. The regime says 245 of its troops have been killed since it launched a ground invasion of Gaza in late October. Palestinian groups, however, say the regime is intentionally hiding the real number of casualties among its forces in order to avoid public anger. The Islamic Jihad resistance movement has warned the Israeli Prime Minister over the regime's post-war scheme. The spokesman for the military wing of the Islamic Jihad said the future of the Gaza Strip will only be determined by the resistance movements, not Israel. Abu Hamza said the end of the war in Gaza will be the prelude to the complete destruction of the Israeli regime. He reiterated the group's readiness to continue the fight with Israel as long as it takes. Comments come as Israel plans to control and occupy Gaza after a possible truce there. Abu Hamza also called on Arabs and Muslims to provide Palestine with weapons. He urged all Palestinians to mobilize against Israel on the first day of the holy fasting month of Ramadan. The top Hamas official says the movement has received an invitation to visit Cairo for Gaza ceasefire talks that resume later on Sunday. Osama Hamdan says Hamas is keen to achieve a result that satisfies Palestinians. He says, however, that Israel does not want a ceasefire. He says the regime is killing Palestinians and the U.S. is giving it time to continue the crimes. Meanwhile, Egyptian sources say representatives of Hamas, Qatar, and the U.S. have arrived in Cairo to resume the talks. They say Palestinian and Israeli negotiators have already agreed on the duration of the ceasefire and a prisoner swap. Draft proposals indicate 400 Palestinian prisoners will be released in exchange for 40 Israeli captives. The proposals also include the daily delivery of 500 trucks of humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip, with both sides halting their military operations. However, the Israeli military withdrawal from the coastal strip remains a bone of contention. Israeli forces have fatally shot a Palestinian teen in a violent raid near the Jalazun refugee camp north of the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. According to Palestinian media, 13-year-old Mohammed Khaled Zaid died as a result of serious wounds that he sustained after being hit with the regime forces' live fire. Local sources said Israeli forces left the teen bleeding for about an hour before handing him over to Palestinian ambulance services. Another Palestinian teenager was also injured during the raid. Israel has intensified its incursions across the West Bank since launching a genocidal war on the Gaza Strip on October 7. Attacks by Israeli forces and settlers have left more than 400 Palestinians dead in the occupied territory since then. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, earlier joined us with more details about the latest Israeli deadly raid in the occupied West Bank.
This team was shot dead by the Israeli soldiers last night near Al-Jalazon refugee camp. We have to mention that there's the illegal settlement of Beit Il. It's adjacent to the refugee camp of Al-Jalazon. And the Israelis claim that this Palestinian child, 13-year-old Mohammed Zaid, tried to throw Molotov cocktails at the nearby Israeli settlement. And then the Israelis opened fire at him, shot him, and left him bleeding. Then the Israelis were reporting that a Palestinian was shot and killed under the bridge of Al-Jalazon refugee camp. There are walls separating the illegal settlement of Beit Il. There are towers surrounding the settlement of Beit Il with Israeli soldiers there. So it's according to the family, it's impossible for this child to go to this nearby area and to try to throw Molotov cocktails. But as usual, the Israelis try to show that it's another act by Palestinians to carry out any form of aggression against the Israelis, and that's why they opened fire. He was only 13 years old, he was the only child of his family, and he was shot and killed. This means the number of Palestinians who were killed by the Israeli forces since the 7th of October rises to 419. Palestinians were shot and killed by the Israeli forces, and a number were killed by the settlers.
Nicaragua has sued Germany at the International Court of Justice for financing Israel and for cutting aid to the UN Palestinian Refugee Agency, UNRWA. As announced by the ICJ, the Latin American country has accused Berlin of violating international law by its continued funding for Tel Aviv. Nicaragua has asked the court to order emergency measures that would force Germany to cease military aid to Israel and to restart funding UNRWA. Nicaragua says that Germany is facilitating the Israeli genocide against Palestinians by defunding UNRWA. Germany is a key ally of the Israeli regime and, according to UN experts, one of Tel Aviv's biggest arms providers alongside the U.S. At least nine UNRWA donors, including Germany and the U.S., have suspended funding for the agency. Thousands of Austrians have taken to the streets of the capital, Vienna, to protest against the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Waving Palestinian flags, the demonstrators marched to the House of the European Union and Parliament building. They chanted slogans including Free Palestine and Hands Off Rafah. Protesters called for an immediate ceasefire and the delivery of humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip. Similar rallies were also held across European countries.
Scene of rallies on Saturday in solidarity with Gaza and in condemnation of Israel's inhuman attacks against Palestinian civilians. Rome, Florence, Pisa, Syracuse, Grosseto. For the umpteenth time since early October, tens of thousands of people across Italy took to the streets of their respective cities to express their anger at the Italian government for unconditionally supporting the Israeli regime and at the international community for its complicity in Gaza genocide.
Today, more than ever, international law is just an abstract set of norms which prevails over humanity. Millions of people have died since the Sykes-Picot Accord over 100 years ago, and we're still arguing over the fact that Palestine is a state or not.
We'll go down in history as those who silently supported the genocide period.
Italy has not condemned Israel for the killing of unarmed Palestinians collecting aid in Gaza in an attack that killed more than 100 people on Thursday. However, Rome has called on the Israeli regime to investigate the incident and bring the perpetrators behind the Eid massacre to justice.
The Italian police crackdown on students during Palestine solidarity demonstrations in the past weeks has sparked outrage across Italy. Student collectives are at loggerheads with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and police over the rise in attacks against students.
The government and police repression has revealed the bare truth. Our country is a democracy only on paper. Ours are simply the democracies of double standards and deception. We have been attacked during our protest for peace in Ukraine, and we are attacked today. We perfectly know how democracies work in Western countries.
Thousands of artists, curators and critics have signed an open letter calling on the Venice Biennale, one of the world's largest contemporary visual art exhibitions, to exclude the Israeli National Pavilion from this year's art exhibition due to the brutal assaults against the civilians in Gaza. However, Italy's culture minister has firmly backed Israel's participation. Max Civili, Rome.
Across France, supporters of Palestine marched to denounce Israel's constant atrocities and war crimes during their latest invasion of Gaza. The world has been stunned by what's been dubbed the Flower Massacre, the death of over 100 Palestinians and the wounding of nearly 800 others after Israeli troops opened fire on civilians waiting for food.
We are here to ask for sanctions and to expose the hypocrisy of those who say they were shocked by the killing of people starving that were getting humanitarian aid, but at the same time don't do anything to stop the genocide.
Some 600,000 people in Gaza, or 25% of the population, are currently at risk of famine.
The French Foreign Ministry said the shootings were unjustifiable and backed a call for an independent investigation by the United Nations. French President Emmanuel Macron demanded truth, justice, respect for international law, and called for an immediate ceasefire.
In the Western world, which is and remains accomplice with the Israeli genocide, but a slight change in the tone of all those Western leaders, including Emmanuel Macron. Remember that a few months ago, Macron was proposing a military coalition to fight the Palestinian resistance in Gaza.
4 years ago, Macron forced through a bill which equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, despite the obvious differences between the two.
Il a deux visages.
Macron is two-faced. It is only since the International Criminal Court announced that they would investigate Israel that Macron began to say just a few words which were not in total support of Israel. He continues to give arms to Israel and is as complicit as the leaders in Tel Aviv.
Many marchers carried signs of deceased United States soldier Aaron Bushnell, who set himself on fire at the Israeli embassy in Washington after declaring that he will no longer be complicit in genocide. After the start of Israel's invasion of Gaza, France imposed a nationwide ban on pro-Palestinian demonstrations around the country. Activists were forced to endure mass arrests, a record number of fines, and the infamous brutality of France's police. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
More breaking news on what's happening in the Gaza Strip. 9 Palestinians have been killed and several more injured in a bombing of an aid truck. Let's see if Muti Abu Musaba, a correspondent who joins us from Deir al-Balah, can tell us anything about that. Muti, a couple pieces of news that we've had here. The most recent one that I'm looking at, 9 Palestinians killed because of an aid truck. I guess it was bombed. Do you have any information on that? And, of course, anything else that you have for us?
Yes, actually, it's another appalling crime the Israeli occupation forces committed against the Palestinian people, particularly the humanitarian aid. The Israeli fighter drones attacked a humanitarian truck moving on the coastal street near Deir al-Balah city, claiming the lives of at least 9 Palestinian civilians, including police officers who were safeguarding that truck. The dead bodies were brought into the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital here, cut into pieces. They were completely ripped up by that attack. It's a continuation of the Israeli attack on the humanitarian aid, aiming at depriving the Palestinian people of having those aid in order to deepen the suffering of the Palestinian people. This is actually what the Palestinian Red Crescent Society stated, that these continuous attacks on the humanitarian aid moving to the Palestinian people here in the Gaza Strip aim at deepening the suffering of the Palestinian people, because, as you know, that those aid is considered as the only lifeline remaining for the Palestinian people amid this this destructive and genocidal war waged against the Gaza Strip. So we are talking about rising number of the Palestinian civilians who are being killed day and night in the Gaza Strip. And according to Gaza's health ministry, that over the last 24 hours, the Israeli occupation forces committed 9 massacres, claiming the lives of 90 Palestinian civilians and injuring 177 Palestinian civilians. These continuous and chronic airstrikes and attacks actually took the whole number of the Palestinian civilians who have been killed since the beginning of this onslaught on Gaza to 30,450 Palestinian civilians, while roughly 71,700 Palestinian people were injured. We are talking about rising numbers of the Palestinian casualties over the continuous and the chronic Israeli airstrikes. In the meantime, these airstrikes actually intensified recently against Rafah City and against Jabalia refugee camp. Several resented buildings were destroyed over those areas respectively. On the other hand, the Israeli war on the Palestinian children continues, as the number of the Palestinian children who were killed by starvation actually amounted to 15 Palestinian children. And this number is highly expected to rise exponentially and dramatically, as those Palestinian children are still deprived of the basic humanitarian need, particularly the milk, the food, and the drinkable water.
Thank you for that. We do appreciate it. Muti Abu Musaba there from Deir al-Balah. Thank you, Muti. And that does it for World News. Let's bye-bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all Islamic denominations have in common.
On the occasion of the 40th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, February 11th, 2019, discrimination in the distribution of public resources and granting special privileges and tolerating economic cheaters, all of which result in injustice, are strictly forbidden. Moreover, ignoring classes in need of support is never acceptable. These words have been frequently repeated in the form of policies and laws, but for a proper implementation, we place our hope in the young people to do it. And if the leadership of the various sectors of the country is entrusted to young, revolutionary, wise, and competent young people, who are not few in numbers, thanks be to God, this hope will be fulfilled, God willing. National independence means the freedom of the nation and the state from the imposition and bullying of the domineering powers of the world. And social freedom means the right for every member of the society to decide, act, and think, both of which are Islamic values. They are divine gifts bestowed upon humans and none of them is a gift to be offered to the people by the state. Governments are obliged to provide the two above-mentioned rights. The importance of freedom and independence is well known by those who have fought for it.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Iranian nation is among them, thanks to the 40-year jihad. The current independence and freedom of the Islamic Iran were achieved by the blood of hundreds of thousands of honorable, brave, and self-sacrificing human beings, often young, but all in the high ranks of humanity. This fruit of the pure tree of the revolution cannot be put at risk by naive and sometimes biased justifications. All, especially the government of the Islamic Republic, are obligated to do their utmost to protect it. Obviously, independence should not be defined as the confinement of the politics and the economy of the country within its borders, and freedom should not be defined in opposition to divine ethics, law, values, and public rights. National dignity, foreign relations, defining borderlines in relations with the enemy. The three are branches of the principle of dignity, wisdom, and expediency in international relations. The global scene today witnesses a phenomena that are unfolding or will unfold in the near future. The new dynamism of the Islamic awakening movement based on the model of resistance to the U.S. and Zionist domination.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
To our ports.
Hajja Fatima was born in 1948. This was the year Palestinians refer to as Al-Nakba, the catastrophe, when Israel wiped the Palestinian inhabitants from 400 villages. Some they entirely destroyed. Others were repopulated with Jewish immigrants. Hajja Fatima was born in the field while her father fought in the war. Within days of her birth, her family fled to Beit Anan in the West Bank, which is where she has remained her entire life.
First of all, this is my land and my country. It is not only the 1948 or 1967 borders from the sea to the river, 27,000 square kilometers. I am not ready to let go of a centimeter. This is historical Palestine.
Al-Quds.
Jerusalem, the most important one, the capital. This is Bab al-Shams and this is Bab al-Karameh. The Jordan Valley has been conquered and taken over by the Israelis. Here is Jenin. We will never let go of this area. And north is the Galilee, now ruled by Israel. My mother brought me into this world on the 14th of July 1948, the day of the Nakba. I was born in a field and left for 24 hours while my father fought in the war. I now fight with my words. Although this is my only weapon, I'm strong because I'm right.
Since her exile, Haji Fatima has witnessed dramatic changes in the landscape surrounding her home. From the construction of the Israeli wall, which eventually encircled her home, to the gradual building of Israeli settlements, which engulfed what was once Palestinian agricultural land. Her town was once considered the safest path to walk to the holy city of Jerusalem, Al-Quds.
The last time I visited Jerusalem, Al-Quds, was 7 years ago, but it is now forbidden by the Israelis. They forbid me from everything that I hold dear to me, praying in Al-Aqsa Mosque, buying sweet cakes from the old markets of Jerusalem and walking through the ancient path of the old city. There is no place more beautiful than Jerusalem. I would love to be there just to see the markets, the shops, the old streets, and to pray in Al-Aqsa Mosque. Bab al-Karameh was built because it is the western entrance for Jerusalem. It is near Jerusalem, and this is why we built this village and named it Karameh. It means our pride.
Haji Fatima described the land to me, stating, "The land is our bed and the blankets our sky." Palestine to Haji Fatima is not exclusively about the land itself, but the Palestinians' relationship to their land. She told me that people can and will continue to live from the land, and only when their livelihood is taken, that will be the end of Palestine. Fatima sews each village and city into the map of Palestine, without borders, without boundaries, without settlements, without Israeli cities, and without the infamous wall built by Israel to separate what is now called Israel to the West Bank.
We want peace and they want peace. Our weapons is the rock and words. But we are rightful people. This is our land. Our ancestors are from here. Since 1968 they have been excavating tunnels, found a trace of evidence or antiquities. All of these antiquities are Arab, Muslim, Christian. We and our fellow Christians live together here. Jerusalem has the Church of Holy Sepulchre and it has Al-Aqsa Mosque. Whoever they want to imprison, let them imprison. Who they want to kill, let them kill. If they want to take a tree, we will plant 1,000. They break and we build. We are here for a long time. We are never going to be bored. They asked me, why do you see Palestine like this? This is my country and I can draw it as I want and make it more beautiful.
Fatima joined Palestinian and international activists from around the world in building the protest village Bab al-Karameh.
They didn't leave their land or houses, and therefore they became refugees in their own homeland. Jerusalem is near, only a few meters from here, so we consider Beit Iksa to be the western gate for Jerusalem. If they take this village, we wouldn't be able to reach Jerusalem. But Jerusalem is our capital, the capital of the Palestinian state. Whether they like it or not, it's ours and not theirs. We are here today because they are going to take this land to build the wall through it, and we do not approve that. It is the land of our fathers and grandfathers, and also the land of our sons and grandchildren.
About 1,200 hectares from Beit Iksa land, and it just leaves about 2,000 hectares for the city, for the village itself. This is what had happened, and this is what they are looking to do it. The train that passes from near here in this neighborhood was passed from the lands of Beit Iksa, and the Israelis want to keep the citizens here far away from the pass of the train and the wall. That's why they separate the land.
Well, I was at the Bab el Shams protest last week, and I myself had my head banged against a bus by a soldier. The bus I was put on to be taken away from Bab el Shams, there was a man with he had a busted eye and a bleeding nose, and the soldiers would not let him receive medical attention.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen, Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim, Maliki Yawmiddin.
In this day, Al-Jum'ah, they pray here in their land because they know keeping their land is part of their religious and beliefs. For though here in Beit Iksa, the village that was surrounded by the wall from the whole parts, from the whole directions, only one path. This path is come and go through the gate that is run by the Israeli soldiers. If you want to enter, you have to give them your ID and tell them why and when you are come to enter Beit Iksa. This is the exact separation. Beit Iksa is living in a big jail here.
It's very clear that the settlements and the theft of land are illegal. The UN has repeatedly condemned it. Members of Amnesty International and other human rights organisations, they've all condemned it. It's just every attempt made to fix the situation is blocked by the US.
Ed Knight described to me that he barely sees the situation on the ground in the news, including settlements, construction and Israeli apartheid.
I think since the experience of the initiative of Bab el Shams, it has been exposed the Israeli settlements much more and the Israeli confiscation of the land much more. It became have lots of interest in, within the international media, international community. And I think this is what we are doing now. If you continue this kind of initiative, they will challenge them more and more. And they will bring it from like a kind of an media coverage to political levels. And that's what we want. We want everybody to be accountable and responsible for this, because Israel is here, like any, by the support of Europe, by the support of the United States. Like, here, they are accountable, as Israel is accountable for what's going on.
The villagers assembled for prayers on the hill. Following this, they erected a tent structure and laid the first bricks for a new mosque they call Kurama, meaning dignity.
You know, Beit Iksa's land is confiscated, like, and now I have no land whatsoever. This is the last piece of land that has been confiscated, which is 450 dirhams. So the strategy here is to come and to build the tents, as you see here, and to stay in the land. So people is living, staying here, sleeping here, staying 24 hours in this land, telling the Israelis one message, the Israeli occupation. This is our land, we are not going to give it easy. You can give orders of like any confiscations, you can give orders of expulsion, but we are going to defend our land. We are going to stay in our land. And this is an open battle, you know, with the Israeli occupation power. So we have no choice but to resist.
This is very symbolic because back in 1948, when the State of Israel was established, the villagers here had 15,000 dulums of land. Right away, 14,000 of those 15 were taken away. And recently, they're trying to take away another 700 of the, so basically they're going to be left with 300 dulums. The village here needs more than that to survive. They have a lot of land that they need to grow food and survive on that. So the Zionist plan is to basically build a wall around the village and between the village and their lands so they can't grow, they can't use it for agriculture to sustain themselves.
Even with immense international support, Israel handed the activists a notice of demolition. They destroyed the mosque and ordered all people to leave the area.
We've been here for 3 days. They always come. Today, Israelis raided our village twice. Of course we prevented them, as we will do every day. At the beginning, they used to build the wall and we would follow them. But now it is the opposite. They follow us. That is why we are staying here. They closed the checkpoint and prevented anyone from entering. Days ago, the eastern gates of Jerusalem, Bab al-Shams, it is called that because the sun rises from the east, and this one is Bab al-Karameh. So instead of Israel surrounding us, we will surround them because we are the people with the rights to the land. The one who has the right is the strongest.
Area is agricultural land, you know, and now we are surrounded with the settlements, and this area in the history the main road to Jerusalem, and the Israelis settlements cutting this main road and cutting the main road to the Ramallah.
We have come here today to construct Canaan village on our land, our Palestinian land, to practice our right to develop our land, to plant our land, to use our land. This is our natural right as human beings, to use our land. That's why we are here today. When we arrived to the area, Israeli occupation or fascist Israeli occupation forces has attacked us, has demolished the tents, stolen the tents, but we are telling them clear message. They have demolished Canaan village here. We will today, not tomorrow, we will build another village in another area in Yatta, today.
We took the case to the High Court for petition to state that this is privately owned land. We were able to get an order from the High Court to not take the camp down for 6 days. However, the army stormed the camp under the pretext of security and announced it as a military closed zone for this period of time. I was shocked that I was unable to enter my own land.
Now we are living in miserable conditions. Because we are cutting from the other areas from Ramallah and Jerusalem. We haven't any work. Our agriculture, all of our agricultural land now is behind of the wall.
The Israeli soldiers told us it was a military closed zone until the 13th of February. I was shocked to see that he had a legal warrant from the head of the IDF to extend the matter to the 13th of February. After the end of the 6 days, the Israeli court granted the Israeli forces permission to take the tents down. This was permitted under a false and unreasonable pretext. Security. The area is isolated. There are no Israeli highways or military bases. No danger towards Israelis whatsoever. It is open land. I strongly object to this excuse that it is a military zone. This is merely an excuse. This, for example, is a title deed from Turkey that proves that we are the landowners. This deed entitles Salah Ali Jirma and all the people of Tor to this land, which includes my family for generations. This title proves that these people are the rightful owners. Only the owners of this land have the rights to it.
Baba Shams was completely encircled by the Israeli army. All protesters were evacuated and Palestinians are now banned from the area. Although Mofid gained permission from the high courts to remain on the land for an additional week, the Israeli police refused this petition and dispersed the protesters without warning or warrant.
2 weeks ago, there was an open day near the wall. We marched towards it and planted olive trees and buried with them the names of martyrs killed by Israel. The soldier attempted to stop us, but we continued digging. The soldiers came, but we did not allow them to destroy our work. We resist. Our work is on the land.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, dear brothers and sisters. This is Youth Station with IRIB English Radio, and I am one of your hosts, Mustafa, and with me today in the studio is...
Yeah, and I'm Beta, and it's a pleasure to be here.
You know, I've been married now for about 12 years.
Nice. Okay?
And I don't think I would have been married for 12 years if my wife wasn't such a forgiving person. In any relationship, right, you have to be forgiving. It's not just a one-way street, right? It's a two-way. Yeah. It's definitely
it's a mutual.
It's a two-way street, right? But it's really, really important, I think, in any relationship. I didn't realize the value of forgiving others or being forgiven. Probably the way I realized it during marriage and having kids. Because kids, all the time, you have to forgive them. Because, you know, they're always doing something crazy or they're doing something that you don't want. And then you have to be forgiving, right?
You know, I'm one of the people that can get easily mad at other people, unfortunately. I'm really trying to be moderate, to be patient, to be this and that, but it's a bit difficult in some situations to keep your temper and to be patient when some other people are judging you in a bad way or are telling you something that they don't have the deep knowledge of that thing. And in those situations, I would be really angry. I would act as sometimes sometimes it happens with my beloved ones. For example, with my family, with my sister specifically. And at those times, I'm really happy that I have a forgiving family that always forgive me in these kind of situations. And they would understand me that sometimes I get angry. I don't have any kind of serious intention of spouting those words at the at my beloved people. And the thing is, being forgiving and being forgiven sometimes at both situations are some blessings that we can go through in our life.
Right.
So first, let's start with being forgiving towards the people when they make mistake. Are you a patient one?
I don't think I can answer that question that well. But what I would say is that, you know, forgiveness is one of God's attributes, right? It's one of his 99 names, that he is Ghafoor, that he is the forgiver. And I try to get my inspiration from that, you know, that as much as God has been forgiving to me in my life and all the mistakes that I've made, and he's still been there for me, you know, he's still been loving. So in the same way, God says you should, you know, we have narration, he says that you should be that way. You should be forgiving like God.
Yeah.
If you forgive others, then God will forgive you.
Yeah.
Right? And of course, we have so many examples where the prophets or the imams, they forgave their enemies. Right? I think one of the best examples that I like is of Hazrat Hur in Karbala.
Exactly.
You know, he was the guy who stopped Imam Hussein's horse, you know, from moving forward, you know. He grabbed the reins of the horse.
Yeah.
Right? But later on, when he came to ask forgiveness for that, the Imam forgave him. Right? Our Imams can be so forgiving towards their own enemies or people who have wronged them so much. Why can't I be that way? You know, why can't I be forgiving towards others as well, right? It's not easy, obviously. It's very difficult to do that. But if you do it, you'll feel much better on the inside.
Yeah.
Right? Have you been in any situation where you've had to, like, forgive someone?
Yes, I was,
for something extreme, maybe?
I believe no one is perfect. Every individual on this earth has some, for example, deficiencies, has some weaknesses, and the weakness may reveal itself in communication with other people. So sometimes other people will make mistakes, and this is completely natural. Okay, the thing that will make me really upset about other people is that when they make mistakes and they know they are making mistakes, but they don't accept that they are the one that is making mistakes, and they don't go for apology. And these are the situations that forgiveness is becoming really difficult for me.
Yes.
Even at the times that they are regretful about their past behavior, even at those times, still it's a bit difficult for me to be forgiving towards these people. But at least I try to have the seerah of my infallibles, peace be upon them, and also keep in mind that it was one of the biggest characteristics of Allah Almighty that he is merciful and forgiving. And whenever you are regretful about the things that you did in the past, whenever you feel that you have to go in the doors and in arm of Allah Almighty and ask his forgiveness, he's always there to accept you. And when I see this amount and this vastness of forgiving from my Creator, then there is no way other than being forgiving for me. It's time to go for a short break to get refreshed.
Okay. The topic that we've been discussing is forgiveness. And one thing that you said that kind of triggered a thought in my mind is that, you know, you were saying some people that don't accept responsibility and it becomes harder to forgive them. You know, I found that sometimes with those people, if you do forgive them, or if it's happened with me, right? Maybe I, especially with my dad, for example, he's a very forgiving person. When he would forgive me, I would feel even worse. if he would get angry with me, that wouldn't be as bad. But sometimes when he was so nice to me, when he was so forgiving to me after something bad that I'd done,
yeah.
it made me feel even worse about it, right?
I know these feelings.
So sometimes, like, even if someone doesn't accept the responsibility, but if you're, like, nice towards them, you cause them much more pain than coming angry with them.
I believe this behavior is way too nice and way too humane that will touch the heart of those people yeah. who are in mistake. And the thing is, up to here, we talked about this characteristic of being forgiving towards someone that make mistake. But another dimension to look at this topic is being the one who is actually forgiven.
We all yeah. love, like, you know, for our mistakes to not be looked at, right?
Maybe. No. But, you know, there are times there are some people who are so arrogant that when they make mistake and when they come to you in order to, for example, tell you that, okay, I made this mistake, and when you forgive them, they feel like, oh my God, how dare you, for example, look down at me to, for example, see yourself in a position to forgive me.
Okay, thankfully, I've never been in that situation,
yeah,
so
me too,
it's difficult for
people.
Me to sort of relate to that.
Yeah.
But you mentioned, like, arrogance, right?
Exactly.
Arrogance is a big barrier towards not only forgiving others, but also seeking forgiveness. And, you know, the best example of that we have is in the Quran,
yeah.
is of Shaitan, right? Is of
yeah.
that he disobeyed God. Instead
yeah.
of, like, asking for forgiveness, what does he do? He becomes arrogant. He says, like, this was your mistake, by the way.
Exactly.
There's a story. There's this thing called the Gospel of Barnacle, I think, I can't remember the exact name.
Okay.
It's basically, a Gospels are like parts of the Bible. It's not considered an official part of the Bible, but there's a really interesting story in that you know, Jesus, Hazrat Isa, he says to God, I want to have a meeting with, you know, with
yeah.
Satan, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so they have a meeting, and Satan says, and Jesus says, you know, Hazrat Isa says to Satan, hey, you know, if you were to ask God for forgiveness, I've talked to him. If you ask for forgiveness, he will reinstate you in your position. He'll forgive all the bad things that you've done.
Yeah.
And you just need to ask for forgiveness. And you know what he says in reply? He says, you know, God should ask me for forgiveness because
oh
he's the one who
God.
Made the mistake of making
yeah.
me bow down to Adam. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So arrogance is a huge sort of barrier in both. It works both ways, in being forgiven and even asking for forgiveness.
For sure. So, brother, as you know, we talked about these two dimensions of forgiving and being forgiven. But the thing is, for asking forgiveness from someone, there are some specific ethics and
yes.
morality.
Mm.
Specifically, when you want to ask forgiveness from Allah Almighty, there are some situations and there are some steps that you have to
yes.
take. And for example, telling that, oh, Allah Almighty, I'm regretful, to forgive me is not enough. And let's talk about this process of asking forgiveness
sure.
after a short break.
Okay. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So, welcome back, dear listeners. This is Youthstation. We were talking about the characteristic of being forgiven or forgiving other people. And we came to this point in this question that what are the criteria for asking forgiveness from Allah Almighty?
We've been given those criteria by the Prophet and the Imam. And,
yeah.
You know, I think one of the biggest criteria of, you know, being forgiven is not repeating that action again.
Yeah.
Right? They say that, you know, that is one of the biggest criteria, that you don't do that action again, and that means you're pretty much forgiven, right?
Exactly.
That's like the sign of that. Another one is, for example, that, you know, you sort of have to make up for that, whatever mistake that you made, in the way,
yeah.
to the point that Imam Ali said that, let's say you were committing sins and you asked forgiveness, you know, the fat that's like gotten on your body, that fat needs to be melted away.
Exactly.
Right? So showing you the importance of bringing a very, very huge change in your life. It's not like, you know, I'm saying, oh, sorry, and then I go back and do that again.
Yeah.
right? Then that's not, you're not really being sincere, right?
And I believe you mentioned some important hints, but I think the first step in order to ask forgiveness is to accept that you make the mistake.
Of course, yes.
When you have this level of acceptance to confess that you make a mistake because you're not a complete creature, that's the first step towards Allah Almighty in order to ask forgiveness. And another thing is that not doing that mistake again that you mentioned, but there are times that people feel because they're too get drowned in the ocean of mistakes and sins, they don't have the opportunity to ask forgiveness from Allah Almighty. They cut their hope from Allah Almighty. And this is one of the traps of Satan that I will have for you in order to deviate you from the right path. And it will conceive you in a way that you feel like there is no time for you
right.
in order to compensate the mistakes that you've done up to here.
Definitely hope. You know, we've told that one of the worst things that, you know, a person can do, in fact, it's forbidden in our religion, is to lose hope in God.
Yeah.
Right? There's a verse of the Quran, I can't remember which chapter it's in, but it says, Ya ibadi allazeena asrafu, la taqnatu min rahmatillah, inna la yaghfiru dhunuba jamia. I once heard a lecture on this verse, and I would recommend our listeners to go and look at the sort of background behind this verse.
For sure.
You know, God is so loving in this verse. Like, even every word in it is loving. He says, you know, oh, my servant, you know, the one who's exceeded the limits, you know, I will forgive, you know, don't lose hope. I will forgive all of your sins. And we're told this verse was sent for someone who had done some pretty evil things with a dead body, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not going to repeat those things. To the point when he came and told the prophet, you know, that he had done this thing with the dead body, the prophet told him, you know, get away from me. Like, you know,
oh,
I'm worried
God.
That the punishment of God will come upon me while you're here.
Yeah.
And they say this person then went out, you know, into the desert, and he tied himself like to a rock or a tree for like 40 days. And then this verse came, you know.
I didn't know this.
The prophet said,
verse.
You know, go and
yeah.
open his chains and tell him that he's been forgiven. Like you said, is to not lose hope. And accept the responsibility and
exactly.
confess to God that, you know, you made that mistake.
But it doesn't mean that you can, for example, make use of the forgiveness of Allah Almighty. For example, there are some group of people, specifically youngsters, that they feel like, okay, I have a lot of time in order to ask forgiveness of Allah Almighty. Whenever I get old, I can, for example, go pray or this and that. And nowadays,
yeah.
I have to use my youth time in order to have fun. In order
right.
to do this and that.
Right.
It's not like that. One of the biggest and most beautiful thing in the scene of Allah Almighty is to ask His forgiveness in actually when you are young. And I think it's a blessing for us, for example, to know and to hear these beautiful things. And consider this episode of Youth Station as a trigger for you in order to go and ask forgiveness for all the sins, all the mistakes that you've done up to here.
And also be forgiving, more forgiving towards others.
Yeah.
You know,
To develop
that ability or that quality in yourself. And that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for listening. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Allah, 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 Allah.
Amazon
Part 1.
If you observe the Earth from the space, you may not find all natural features that you studied in geography books, such as mountains, lakes, rivers, airplanes, etc. They don't look like the same as you imagined. You can't see the Mount Everest from that large distance, but there are features that can be seen easily from the space, like the Amazon River. The Amazon River is approximately 6,500 to 6,800 kilometers long and has an average discharge of about 215,000 to 230,000 cubed per second. The Amazon River sets the record in terms of the sheer volume of water. It is the largest rainforest ecosystem in the world. The jungles surrounding the Amazon River are considered the lungs of the planet. It is home to numerous different species. There are thousands of distinct creatures in the Amazon, and you can find everything there. There is also a large company that has been active for 25 years in Seattle, US, where you can find everything you need except houses,